Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Chronic Fatigue and Burnout Recovery Podcast. Today is the first episode that I'm going to be doing in a series of episodes which will talk about what to focus on depending on what stage of fatigue recovery you're in. So for example, if you're bedbound, if you're housebound, if you're returning to work, those are the core ones I'm going to focus on. However, if there's anything more that comes to mind as I record the series, then I might add in another episode as well. I had this idea of what to focus on when you're sort of quite high functioning and doing a lot, but you're still not completely thriving in life. So leave that one with me. I'm kind of talking out loud here. But big thank you to a few people in terms of the series. I've recently taken on an assistant, Irina. Some of you may have had some communication with Irina just through various channels by the time you listen to this episode. And this was actually one of her suggestions, which was a really, really great suggestion. And then I took it to Instagram and I also asked people to share what was helpful for them in these different stages, because I know what was helpful for me and I know what's helpful for the different clients that I'm working with, but there were still some really nice shares or just things I didn't think of at the time that came through Instagram. So that was really nice. So just thank you to everybody who contributed to the creation of this episode. I think I've mentioned a few times on the podcast that sometimes when I'm just so deep in the trenches with one-on-one work with clients, it's kind of hard to, at the end of the day or the week, to kind of think of ideas for the podcast. And whenever I get suggestions, I'm just, especially good suggestions, I'm always so grateful because it takes a little bit of work off my plate. So thank you so much if you were a contributor to this episode. In today's episode, I'll be starting with things that can be supportive while you are bedbound. And full disclosure, in my own experience, I was never bedbound. You know, we all have days where we just feel like we can't get out of bed, but for the most part, those were few and far between, which obviously I'm very grateful for. I do work with people who are bedbound, so I have some insight into their world and their experience. And then obviously I also have the lovely shares from the people of Instagram who also contributed to some of these ideas. So when it comes to being bedbound, I've got different things that I will share with you about what could be helpful. But the very first thing that comes to mind for me, based on experience working with clients, is to support your nervous system. You know, there's obviously many reasons why people end up bedbound, and it's not for me to say on this podcast exactly why that may have happened for you. Your story is unique to you and everybody's story is different. However, my interpretation through the felt sense of the clients who I have worked with who have been bedbound is it is often a reflection of the shutdown in the nervous system. So if you've listened to some of the other episodes I've recorded and talked about the nervous system, if you've listened to my, or watched, shall I say, my Getting to Know Your Nervous System workshop, if you have been taking my Nurturing Resilience course, then you will know about the different branches of the nervous system. So we have the dorsal vagal branch, and then we have the sympathetic nervous system. And what we're really kind of embodying in a more of a bedbound state is that dorsal shutdown collapse branch of the nervous system. And, you know, this can happen for various reasons. From the health histories that I've taken from people who have arrived in this place, it's usually been a lot of chronic emotional stress, dare I say, perhaps emotional suppression as well. And, you know, there can be other physical things. Sometimes it is a physical thing like a virus, which just tips the scales, or a vaccination, which just tips the scales, or something else very kind of physical that happens, which tips the scales. But often there can be a long-standing history of chronic emotional stress. And remembering here that your body and your nervous system loves you so much And if you have found yourself in this state of, you know, being very stuck in a dorsal nervous system state and you are bedbound, one of the things that can be really helpful in terms of accepting the situation is understanding that this is self-protective. So it is your body and your nervous system believes that it is doing its absolute best to protect you and keep you safe. And in shutting everything down, it's essentially saying you have been doing too much for too long. This is too big. This is too overwhelming. I'm sending you on holiday. Not really, but I'm giving you a break. We are going to rest now. This is why supporting the nervous system can be really probably one of the most important things when you do find yourself bedbound, is because we often have to give ourselves and our system all the nourishment that it didn't have before. Not because we were being intentionally neglectful, but because we didn't know what we needed. And I always say that the journey of healing is really a journey of attunement to ourselves and connection with ourselves, so that we can really understand what we need and tend to the unmet needs that have perhaps been playing out for a lifetime. And when we are able to really stop, or shall I say, when the body stops us, we have got no choice sometimes but to go inwards, however uncomfortable that might be, because sometimes the body is not a comfortable place. But through this journey inwards, we can really begin to create this relationship with ourselves and a relationship of self-connection and self-nourishment in a way that we perhaps never would have otherwise. You don't have to be bedbound for this relationship to begin or become initiated. I think this is often the case for many people who go through this journey, whatever their state of health. But when you are lying in bed 24/7, we often have nowhere to go but inside of ourselves. So it can be a really beautiful opportunity to build that connection with self. It's not really appropriate for me to share specific details about specific cases, but I do one-on-one somatic work with clients who are bedbound. Sometimes they will do the somatic session lying down. And it's actually been very beautiful and very profound working with clients in this way and really witnessing as their nervous system slowly starts to wake up again. So often there can be a lot of shutdown and disconnection and emotional suppression, which is all self-protective. And as we continue together and as we do the work together, it's like little pieces of the body start to become alive again. And, you know, I always say to people, this is going to be a slow process. You're not going to see big gains in the first few months, even. So give this 6 months. But little by little over that time, you really do see the nervous system starting to wake up and come alive. And I also want to be really clear that, you know, when I'm working with people in this way, they're not coming to me and saying, I'm really shut down. I'm really disconnected. I've got so much emotional suppression. Can you help me with that, Anna? That's not the conversation that we're having. Often it's a lot of unconscious emotional suppression, unconscious shutdown that the individual isn't even aware of until we start to do the work. You could be saying, oh, that's not me. And it might not be you. But I would also ask how you know. And that's a question I love to ask my clients. How do you know that? What tells you that? My clients who are listening to this will probably be like, oh, yes, she always asks the hard questions. But anyway, that's where we really want to start when we're supporting someone that's bedbound, is supporting the nervous system. And then also just to say here as well, we can have this very frozen or collapsed or shut down nervous system, but sometimes underneath all of that is a lot of survival energy, is all the unprocessed fight and flight responses that were thwarted at the time, or the sort of suppressed self-expression. And as we work through the dorsal or the free state of the nervous system, sometimes there can be more activation. And sometimes people will complain of feeling more anxious or more anxiety. Sometimes there's a difficulty distinguishing between joy and anxiety or fear. So as we begin to work on the nervous system and some of the more activating sensations begin to awaken, we also want to and need to have capacity to manage those. And so this is where, it can obviously be helpful. I've spoken about this in previous episodes, to do calming things. And we definitely want to do calming things. We also need good rest. But we don't want to just be doing yoga nidras and just be doing meditation and just be doing really calming things that don't also give space for the activation underneath the freeze. So you can listen to other episodes that I have done on the nervous system if you want to learn a little bit more about this. Of course, if it's within your capacity while you are bedbound, you could also do my Nurturing Resilience subscription, which is a self-study course. You know, you might be mentally okay to do some self-study from bed. You might not be at this stage, but if you do have some capacity, that could be a really good option for you to work through, to just work more with your nervous system and also learn how to work with activation in the nervous system over and above just calming exercises like meditation and yoga nidra and breath work. So the other thing that we also want to think about while we're bedbound is acceptance. I mean, any chronic illness brings with it incredible loss. Loss of the life that you planned, loss of the old self, loss of perhaps a job, loss of relationships, loss of friendships, just loss on so many different levels. And when you're bedbound, you'd lose so much more because you'd literally have your life shrink to being so incredibly small. And we need to make space for that grief. We need to make space to grieve all the losses, irrespective of where you are in your journey. We need to make space to grieve all the losses. And through giving space for the grief, which means giving space for emotions, which means connecting to your system and to your nervous system and having tools to process the emotions, then we can eventually, and you can't rush it, move towards some sort of level of acceptance. Like, this is where I am now. Like, this is the situation. I'm here. And it's absolutely okay to feel angry about where you are. It's absolutely okay to feel fear and frustration and hopelessness. All of those emotions are completely valid. And with somatic tools, we can hold space for those emotions. But we want to also have space for acceptance. So this is where I am. This is the situation. And I'm going to have to focus on what I can do instead of what I can't do, and then start to think about how I move forward from here. And in some cases, people may need a lot of rest in the beginning. Obviously, some people can't sleep, and then some people just feel like they need to sleep all the time. If you're somebody who just feels like they need rest and sleep, I would just encourage you to take it. And there can be a fear of, like, how long is this going to go on for? If I just rest and sleep, I can't do that forever. I need to get my life back. And obviously, there's this delicate dance between just honoring what the body needs in the moment and then trusting that there is a rhythm to the body. And then as the body's rhythm restores itself, there will be a turning point where we feel that we don't need to rest and we don't need to sleep as much anymore. And we might be ready to think about other things. If you're somebody who can't sleep, then I would say you want to be able to have some sort of sleep rhythm that you restore, even if that requires in the short term medical intervention just to get you sleeping. That might be what's needed. But working on your nervous system is also something that's really going to help with sleep, because often it's all this unprocessed sympathetic activation that needs to be discharged, which is impacting sleep. And this is where the Nurturing Resilience course or somatic experiencing can be really, really helpful. So we want to, you know, allow space for that rest as needed. But then eventually we're maybe going to start to come out of that rest. And depending on the personality, there might be a tendency to want to fix the situation. And I would still say to go very gently and honor the pace of the body, because if we rush ahead and we try to do too much too soon, that can potentially work against us, because the nervous system might clamp down and shut down even harder if we try to go at a pace which is a little bit too quick. So this is really a tricky one, because a lot of people arrive in this state because they have been disconnected from their bodies for so long. And so I could say honor the needs of your body, but a lot of people just don't even know what that is and what that means. And in fact, the journey of healing is coming into better connection with self, so that you can honor and you can listen and you can attune to yourself. And that takes time, and it's a process. So we really just want to give space and then focus on what we can do. It's obviously, you know, situations can be tricky. It's really helpful if we have the support of loved ones around us. Not everybody has that, but if you do have supportive loved ones, that is an extra bonus. And then you could also just begin to very gently engage with recovery stories to build hope. So if you have the capacity to listen to something, Raylan Eagle, who I've interviewed on this podcast, has a great YouTube channel with lots of recovery stories. Now, even if you just listen to a recovery story in bed with your eyes closed, then that could really help to, even if you're not ready for change and ready to mobilize energy to address your health right now, just by listening to the stories, you are potentially sending positive messages to your nervous system that recovery is possible. And this is not going to be forever. This is just how things are right now. So that's kind of what I wanted to say about kind of the overall situation of being bedbound from a more of a nervous system perspective. There are more practical things that you can think about as well. So services and supports that you may find beneficial in these early stages could be some sort of meal delivery service. I'll talk a little bit about like physical things in a moment, but it obviously can be really hard unless you've got like an incredible supportive family or partner who will cook you special meals to a particular design. I wouldn't put too much pressure on yourself at this stage to follow any specific dietary strategy, obviously, unless you are like celiac and you do have to avoid gluten or you have specific allergies. You know, those things do need to be catered for. But there's no shame in just relying on imperfect meals, ready meals, meal delivery services, meals delivered by family members, even if they aren't as healthy as you would like them. We have to give ourselves some grace when we're in the situation. And I think the more distress one can have about, oh, I'm not eating the right thing, or this thing is good, not good for me, that just creates more unsafety in the nervous system, which is the opposite of what we're trying to achieve. Then you could also, for example, have family members who come around and clean or help with household chores, even, you know, neighbors, or even a paid service that could come in and help, budget depending, to help you with some of those practicalities of the day to day. I know a lot of my, you know, my bedbound clients, like even getting up and going to the bathroom is a really big deal. So, you know, there are things that you could think of, like, for example, shower stools and things like that, but that may even be too much when you are bedbound. So in terms of physical support, I do think it's important if somebody is bedbound to make sure that they're not living in mold. Because if you're stagnant in a moldy home and say it's winter and all the doors and windows are closed, that's not necessarily going to be the best environment for you to get better and thrive. So you could listen to the mold episodes where I talk about mold testing. The specific test you could get is the ERMI, which is the Environmental Relative Moldiness Index, just to check that you are not spending all your day in a moldy home. easy things that you could look at from a nutrition point would be like electrolytes. You know, you can add electrolytes to the water that you're drinking, and that could be potentially really beneficial. With clients I've worked with who are bedbound, we have looked at nutrient deficiencies. You can do urine testing. So provided you have enough energy to collect a urine sample, then we could look at nutrition deficiencies. And I have seen with clients, it's not usually one thing that makes the difference, but sometimes it's a little bit of everything that really helps, and addressing nutrient deficiencies can be supportive. I do think blood sugar management is helpful, but as I've said already, you do have to give yourself some grace with your diet at this point in time. That may come later, or that's something that could be refined later as you become a little bit more well and you're able to move around and maybe cook for yourself, that type of thing. And I've mentioned already about the importance of really giving yourself the space to sleep and rest, especially in the early stages. You might just need to surrender to that dorsal state of the nervous system. But as time goes on, you could potentially just consider some very gentle movement in bed, even just things like moving your ankle joints, moving your wrists, moving your head side to side, you know, some very gentle stretches, very gentle movements. We need to get the body moving again. And especially if the nervous system is in more of this dorsal state, movement is what brings it back to life. And so that's been a really beautiful part of working somatically with people who are bedbound, is reconnecting them with movement that feels safe, and allowing them to discharge a little bit of the activation in their body through safe movements, and just gradually building up that capacity to tolerate movement again. You also might want to build tolerance for sitting up. So even just as you're starting to feel a bit better, you sit up and then do an activity, and then you can lie down again, even if it's for a couple of minutes. Just like you would build up your fitness, you would just do like a couple of minutes and you would rest, and then gradually build up your endurance as time goes on. So eventually, I guess, moving towards being more housebound than bedbound. We also want to manage sensory overload, so things like bright lights, sounds, strong smells could all be very triggering when someone is not feeling very well. So you might want to get a really good eye mask, you might want to get noise-canceling headphones, you might want to make sure that there's no strong smells or air fresheners or laundry detergents, things like that, which could potentially be triggering you. Obviously, open windows, let in fresh air, consider air purifier if needed. Also, just managing or having someone help you manage like the cleanliness of the room that you're in, especially if you have allergies to dust or pet dander and things like that, which could all potentially be making you feel more uncomfortable. And so then as time goes on, you may then want to just gradually build up your tolerance for cognitive function. When I was really unwell, sometimes I would just lie in bed and I would just put on some really gentle music and I would just listen to the music. And if you're somebody, for example, your starting point is that you just need to be in silence, then you can even start with just listening to a song or a small portion of a song and just gradually building up that ability to listen to music again. And then you could add in other things. So for example, starting to read, even if it's just one paragraph, you have to start where you are. Watching TV, you know, some of my clients will say, well, now I can watch the thrillers or the crime series because I have a little bit more tolerance for like the angst of the TV program. Listening to podcasts, it doesn't have to be like an information podcast. Sometimes you can just listen to like easy listening, chatty podcasts. Maybe potentially having visitors come round and just being really clear on the boundaries, like even if it's just for 10 minutes, like, yes, you can come and visit. My capacity is 10 minutes. When I say you need to go, you need to go. Or if you're not ready for visitors, it could just be a telephone conversation. I had one client and I just said, you know, is there a good friend who could call you, and they know they mustn't speak to you for more than 5 minutes, just so you can build up your listening capacity and your conversation skills. And again, as you're perhaps able to sit up in bed, you could then consider things like creative projects, like knitting, hand sewing, cross stitch, crossword puzzles, Sudoku. So all of these things are going to stimulate the brain. And, there's a time for rest and there's a time for just shutting out all the stimulation and all the sensory overload. But eventually, if we just shut everything out, we will lose our cognitive fitness over time. So when the time is right, we need to add these things back in. And sometimes people say, well, you know, I can't read a chapter of a book, or I can't listen to half an hour of music. But we just have to start with the smallest manageable dose. It might feel a little bit uncomfortable, but we can do it and we don't feel worse afterwards. So it might just be you do, you know, one line of the Sudoku, or you do one line of the crossword puzzle, or whatever it is, and then you have a rest. But as time goes on, that you build that slowly and slowly over time. And that can be really rewarding as you see that progress. So, you know, eventually perhaps, you know, you're sitting up in bed, you're doing some of these cognitive tasks, then maybe you could even get up, sit in a chair, and then do some of these tasks and then go back to bed. And that's kind of how we then transition between being bedbound and housebound. But it's a gradual process and you really just want to give space for the process. It can also be helpful to still pace yourself. We talk about pacing a lot, and why I talk about pacing a lot in the podcast and the importance of pacing. And so even if you are bedbound, you're still pacing the activities that you're doing, because you probably have to eat a meal and then rest. And then maybe you listen to something and then rest. And then you do a little somatic practice and then you rest. And then it's time for the next meal again, and then you rest. So there's still pacing, which is happening, periods of activity, periods of rest, even when you are bedbound. Can be helpful also just to have like practical things nearby. Do you need your toothbrush? Do you need a face cloth? Do you need some dry shampoo, a hairbrush, etc.? Like have a little pack of things close to the bed, change of clothes close to the bed, so it's easy to practice that sort of personal hygiene. And then it can actually be helpful to work on digestive support. Our digestion can potentially be compromised because we're not moving and the body's in a fixed position all the time. I'm not saying this should be something that you should worry about too much, but just kind of gentle digestive support. So, you know, if needed, digestive enzymes, stomach acid support, probiotics, things like that could potentially be quite easy to do because they are just supplements. If you can sit up and take a supplement, that is something that you could also think about here. Apart from that, the only other thing I had on my list was just to create a routine where possible. You know, when you are lying in bed all day, it can just feel like one day merges into the other. And having some sort of structure and some sort of routine to your day, where you do certain things at certain times, can be really beneficial just for also creating the same, instilling some sort of biorhythm for your body. You could use a bright light lamp in the mornings to signal that it's daytime. You use like a red light after sunset so that you're signaling that like night and day, making sure you've got good blackout curtains, a good blackout mask for when you're sleeping at night. So because you can't go outside, that it can be really helpful just to still create that illusion of a circadian rhythm with things that can help us. So that brings me to the end of this episode today. There may have been other things that I haven't spoken to or haven't mentioned, but hopefully there's a few ideas in here for you that will just, I think the most important thing is when in this situation is just to really give space for what is. And I know that that is easier said than done, but when you are in this situation, to allow for it. That doesn't mean that you want it to stay the same, or you're not willing to work on things so that you can improve, but also to have respect for the self-protection. And your body has probably been through a lot. You've been holding a lot for a really long time. And there is a self-protective benefit to what's happening. But we want to work with that instead of against it to move forward. So I will leave you with that thought and see you in the next episode.